Canada starts off pretty normal on the West Coast. British Columbia, you know, it's like beautiful natural resources. They shoot TV shows and movies there. That's like your California, right? And then there's Alberta, where it's like oil and cowboys. That's like your Texas. And then there's Saskatchewan, which we've established are all perverts. Looks like I'm not performing in Saskatchewan again. And then there's Manitoba, which Manitoba is like that friend you invite last to the party. And only because you forgot they existed.
Broadcasting like we don't exist, this is The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
I'm on fire.
Everybody, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Lots to go over tonight. Solo show for me, as a number of people are away for Canada Day. Happy Canada Day, everybody. I do want to make mention, though, The Hockey Show does stand with everybody from the Indigenous community, all the Indigenous peoples across Canada. When it comes to the residential schools, we need to learn to listen, accept that wrongs were done and atrocities were committed, vow to be an ally for sure, to learn more and to stand with the Indigenous peoples in this country during this difficult time. Canada United is so much stronger than it is divided, so let's get together, let's help each other, and certainly wear orange if you can today, folks, and represent the good people from the Indigenous communities across this country. Certainly a big Canada Day when it comes to recognizing some of the faults that we've had in our past. I do want to draw attention to the fact that we're going to have a few clips from the Treaty Relations Commission of Manitoba's public education campaign known as We Are All Treaty People in between segments on the show today. Reason being is that, again, we need to be good allies here at UMFM, here at The Hockey Show for Indigenous peoples, and certainly I need to know and I want to know more about, you know, the history and some of the stuff that went on. So these short clips will play in between some of the segments in order to better reflect some of the stuff that we need to learn about and some of the stuff we need to be aware of when it comes to being better allies of Indigenous people. So I hope you'll enjoy those. It is The Hockey Show, though, so we're going to have to talk a little bit about hockey today. And I'm going to start with a topic that I think everybody is well aware of. NHL Awards happened the other night. Not a lot of surprises there. Marc-Andre Fleury might have been the biggest surprise at age 36, winning the Vezina Trophy on his first nomination. I was a little surprised it was his first nomination, but c'est la vie. I mean, that's Marc-Andre Fleury, and he played for the Penguins, who were pretty much an offensive team for most of their setup. McDavid won the Hart unanimously, joining Wayne Gretzky as the only two players to do that. He also won the Ted Lindsay. Adam Fox won the Norris Trophy, which to me made a lot of sense. I thought that Fox had an outstanding season based upon how he played for the team that he played for. Victor Hedman, you can certainly talk about how good he is, and there's no denying that, but the fact that Fox basically was the defender who carried the New York Rangers in most situations, I think, leads to my agreeing with that choice more often than not. Kaprizov wins the Calder, no real surprise there. He did lead all rookies in points. He legitimately was a difference maker every time he was on the ice for the Minnesota Wild. I have no issue with that. The thing I have a problem with, and I know the NHL likes to pat itself on the back and put all the glitz and glamour of the Oscars into, you know, these award nights, I actually kind of like the award show done in an hour without all the fuss and all the people that are, you know, that are invited to show up and do whatever. I actually like it better. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that. I don't care if a D-list celebrity is presenting an award for a team that he might have watched for a couple of games this season. It doesn't matter to me. Just present the damn award. Get it done. 90% of fans don't really care about, quote-unquote, the show part of the show. They just care about the awards and who voted for who. That's always fun. That generates a ton of chatter on social media and certainly opens up the door to, you know, fans questioning professionals and what they see and what they do, and professionals questioning fans as to whether or not they actually watch the games. I mean, that drama aside, I mean, on social media. But it's nice to see the NHL being transparent about who, about, you know, the number of votes that people got and who was in the running for these awards. So personally, I don't care about the show. I would like them to keep it virtual if they could. I know that some will disagree with that. I know that people like seeing, you know, the stars sitting there while, you know, somebody from Saturday Night Live tells jokes on the stage for the first, you know, 15 minutes of the show. But I'm done with it. Just give me the awards, give me the votes, and we're good. The bigger show, obviously, is the Stanley Cup Final. Let's keep the focus on the hockey and not on everything else. There are some other bigger stories, and we're going to get to those in a second, because I do want to make comment on a couple of bigger ones. But NHL awards, I thought, was a good one. Stanley Cup Final, Montreal finds himself down 2-0 to a team that legitimately looks like it's the better team so far. I don't know if Montreal has it in to come back. I know that they're going to look at doing that. There was some comments about Alexander Burrows talking to Luke Richardson about, you know, reminding him that Vancouver was down 2-0 in their series against Boston. I don't know if Montreal has it in them to come back. They're going to go back to Montreal where they were denied a larger crowd, but I don't know if it matters to Tampa right now. I mean, they played in front of large crowds the entire time. They have nothing to worry about when it comes to a crowd that's against them. I mean, they were the road team against both Carolina and Florida and dispatched them quite easily. Not super easily, but easily enough. I don't know if it matters. I don't care if you have 80,000 fans or 8,000 fans in the stands. If you don't win hockey games, you can't put pucks by a goaltender with any sort of regularity. You're not going to win. And right now, Montreal has 2 goals in 2 games on Andrei Vasilevskiy. That's not good enough. It's not good enough to win any time of the day, any time of the evening, any time at all. So I'm not holding out a lot of hope right now for Montreal. They're going to have to show, I mean, they played better in game 2, don't get me wrong, but they're going to have to show a lot better play in game 3 if they want to make this a longer series. So we'll see what happens there as game 3 comes up on Friday night, a little bit later than what we want to see. Usually, I think it's 7 or 8 o'clock anyway. Good on Tampa Bay for getting out there and establishing that you know, they are the defending champions, and they're not gonna roll over for anybody. So there's your update on the Stanley Cup Final from my perspective.
At the end of the 19th century, the Canadian Crown was looking to establish the West and protect Canada's borders. Signing treaties with the First Nations made that possible.
My ancestors entered into sacred treaties to protect our land, our languages, and our cultures. They also agreed to share this land and its resources with all newcomers.
Treaties benefit all Canadians and are vital to the history of this country.
We are all
treaty people.
Among other NHL news, you may have heard that ESPN went on a major hiring spree. If you haven't, lots of names that they've basically picked up for next year's setup in terms of covering hockey. I mean, I don't know. This is a huge team. Good on them for hiring all this talent. But let's go through a few of these names right now because, I mean, play-by-play analyst Leah Hextall, we can't mention that enough because, again, Leah's awesome and good for her for becoming the first female NHL play-by-play broadcaster for the NHL. John Buchigross is going to be doing play-by-play. I don't agree with that. I think that's a mistake, to be honest. I know Bucci has a ton of skill and a ton of knowledge, but I see him more as an analyst, to me. But neither here nor there. I mean, they have a few others. Sean McDonough, who is probably going to be one of their lead play-by-play people, is going to be on the program a lot. And Bob Wischusen, will also do play-by-play. It's the analysts that are going to be interesting. Analysts are many. And that means there's probably going to be a lot of shows, a lot of hockey-dedicated programs on ESPN coming up. Among them include Barry Melrose, who previously worked for ESPN, Mark Messier, Kevin Weeks, AJ Maleshko, who we've heard repeatedly on NBC broadcast. She's excellent. Amongst other people they've hired, Ryan Callahan, Chris Chelios, Brian Boucher, Cassie Campbell-Pascal is making the jump from Sportsnet CBC to ESPN. Ray Ferraro, Rick DiPietro, yeah, former NHL goaltender, former New York Islanders goaltender, and Hillary Knight. Hillary Knight of the PWHPA, Hillary Knight of Team USA, also going to be an analyst. So expanding the roster and certainly adding a few new people in there, which is kind of cool. Emily Kaplan will still do some reporting. Greg Wyshynski will still do reporting. And then Blake Bolden, who works for the LA Kings, will also do some reporting as well. I'm not sure how Bolden, if she's still going to continue that relationship with the Kings, but she'll be in there as well. So a wide range of talent and people who have played at various levels and certainly across the world. They're also going to have four guys from ESPN Deportes doing Spanish broadcasts, which is kind of cool because NHL doesn't get a lot of Spanish coverage. So that's kind of neat. I really like that idea. In fact, I mean, I know that we covered in French up here and we got, you know, the Punjabi and we've done, you know, various individual broadcasts in indigenous languages as well. We've done a whole bunch in different languages this season. There was, you know, four or five different languages used this season, German and Mandarin and all sorts of stuff this season where they call the game. I think that this idea of having Spanish broadcasts is going to be really good at maybe expanding the global climate yet again. There are teams. Mexico does have a growing hockey segment, which is going to be good. Obviously, Spain has played in a few of the lower-level world championships. So expanding it to a Spanish group, a Spanish community that really is growing, is probably the best idea that maybe ESPN's had yet. But a lot of names on this list. Again, a lot of people, a lot of experience. ESPN's coverage is going to be thorough next year, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they put it on the TV. As we know, Turner ramping up as well. They've already brought over guys like Albert and Olchek, who are doing all the broadcasting right now. They've got a pile of other guys that are already signed up as well. But I like this because I think with Cassie's departure, not that I'm happy to see Cassie go. I think Cassie does a great job. But with Cassie's departure, it might be a bigger opportunity for Jennifer Botterill on Sportsnet. And honestly, when you look at Kelly Rudy, you look at Kevin Bieksa, when you look at Jennifer Botterill, I think Botterill provides an excellent analysis of what's going on the ice. I mean, certainly she knows she's played at every level. She was a champion in college. She was a champion, you know, obviously at the Olympic level, champion at the international level. But Botterill really brings a different viewpoint to the panel, and I really like it. Not saying that Bieksa and Rudy are terrible at their job. They're not. They're quite the opposite. They're very good. But Botterill just provides a different viewpoint, and I really appreciate that. So hopefully we'll see more from Jennifer Botterill on Sportsnet next season. We'll hope for that to happen. It seems like it would be an obvious shift for her to get more airtime, but man, there are a lot of people working for ESPN next year. So news out of ESPN is they didn't hire Jenna or I. So we're still doing this show and still going to be doing some work for Canada West broadcast. So we'll keep you posted if anything changes there, but no changes on that front at this time.
The province of Manitoba was developed through the hard work and commitment of many peoples. The making of the treaties between First Nations and the Crown is one of the building blocks of this great land. These solemn agreements formalized a mutually beneficial relationship that is the cornerstone of Western Canadian history. Today, all Canadians benefit from Treaties 1 to 11. As long as the sun shines, grass grows, and the waters flow, we are all treaty people.
I want to throw out a bit of a shout out to the Canadian sledge hockey team, Canadian men's national sledge hockey team, who qualified for the 2022 Paralympics by basically reaching the final at the IPC World Championship. Congratulations to them on that achievement. Obviously, great to see them going back to the big games. They'll be over in China in 2022. They did lose in the gold medal game 5-1 to the USA after beating them 2-1 in the preliminary game. But Canada still qualifies, still gets a chance to go over and win another Olympic gold medal. So congratulations to them. Exciting to see that. Again, guys like, you know, Tyler Witherspoon and Billy Bridges and all those guys heading over. Going to represent Canada once more at the 2022 Beijing Paralympics, which is going to be fantastic. The other Canadian team, which I'm preparing for in 2021 at Tokyo, at the Tokyo Olympics, is the field hockey team. Canada's men's field hockey team qualified for the Tokyo Olympics back in 2019 with a thrilling win over Ireland at a qualifier event. The Red Caribou, as they're known, will head over to Tokyo in at the end of July, and we'll get everything going at the stadium in Tokyo in what we're hoping to be a big year for field hockey for them. A lot of guys from UBC on that roster. So just a tie-in to, you know, Canada West and certainly some of the players there. But, I mean, looking at the roster, I mean, they've got a lot of guys who have played a lot of international field hockey. A total of three guys from UBC heading over. A number of guys who play against them, obviously. The weird part is that UBC, for the most part, doesn't play in a league. There is no men's field hockey in Canada West. So they actually play out of the Vancouver Men's Field Hockey League against teams like West Vancouver Field Hockey, against teams like the Vancouver Hawks, against teams like the Burnaby Lakers. There's lots of teams in there. Surrey Lions, lots of good teams that are made up. This entire team, the entire Canadian field hockey team, is from BC, except for two players. And those two are from Belgium and the Netherlands, respectfully. For example, Floris van Son, he is from the Netherlands, and David van den Bosch is from Belgium. So those two, outside of everybody else, are the only two that aren't from British Columbia, which is kind of cool. So this is basically like Team BC going over and competing for Canada, which is kind of cool. But that will start, if you're looking to tune into that, it'll be played out of the Oi Hockey Stadium. It's a 15,000-seat venue in the southern portion of Tokyo, just north of the Haneda Airport. Literally will run for 2 weeks. This is a two-week event. I mean, obviously the women's event runs at the same time in terms of getting them done. But July 24th to August 5th. Is when they'll compete. So keep an eye on that. We'll have lots of updates for that over on Hockey Blog in Canada with the announcements and everything that's going on there as we turn to summer hockey, literally summer hockey, when it comes to the Summer Olympiad and field hockey at that event. So keep your eyes peeled for that, folks. We'll talk a little bit about that. But a couple of Canadian teams going to the Olympics, as I said, field hockey for 2021 and the Canadian Paralympic hockey team going in 2022. Congratulations to both teams on those successes, and we'll keep an eye on how everybody does.
In 1763, King George III signed the Royal Proclamation, which set out the foundation for the Crown's current relationship with First Nations in Canada. The Royal Proclamation formally recognized the relationship between First Nations and the Crown, which resulted in the treaty process that extended into Western Canada. As long as the sun shines, grass grows, and the waters flow, we are all treaty people.
NWHL held their draft the other day. Important to note that three U Sports players were selected in the draft this year. Taylor Davison went number 5 overall to Toronto. She's from New York University. Great defender, actually. Plays the game well, sees the ice well, good vision out there. So congratulations to Taylor Davison. At number 13, University of Alberta's Kennedy Ganser was selected by the Buffalo Buttes. This could be a very good pick for Buffalo. I've always thought that Kennedy was one of the more underrated two-way players. She's great in both zones. She's got great playmaking ability and certainly is good defensively in terms of picking up players and keeping, you know, pucks out of the back of the net. She's excellent at both ends of the ice, as I was saying. But that will reunite her with former teammate Autumn McDougall as well. So that line that they used to have in Alberta, McDougall, Ganser, and Poznikov, 2/3 of it might be reunited in Buffalo next year. So could be a very underrated pick by Buffalo in terms of getting Kennedy Ganser, but she's an outstanding player, and we'll hopefully talk to her in coming weeks if we can. And then at number 22, Toronto also selected Olivia Atkinson from Concordia. Now, Olivia's a bit of an interesting setup. She played 3 years at McGill, played 1 year at Concordia. She finished her last year at Concordia. She did play a season in the CWHL with the Canadiens de Montréal. 17 games played, she had 2 goals and an assist. So she certainly has a little bit of pro experience. The thing about Atkinson that I found, though, is that she will score a lot if she has a setup player. She was very good at McGill at finding the back of the net, which is part of the reason why she got a chance with the Canadiens de Montréal. But I look at this and I go, honestly, if Toronto has a, and they do, Toronto Six has a few good centers playing for them already. If they can get her onto a wing with a decent center, this might be an underrated pick as well. Olivia Atkinson is a very good player, and I think that she gives them a lot of ability to score goals if they need it, especially down the wing. So three players selected in the NWHL draft. Just want to shout out to them. Taylor Davison, again, from York University. Kennedy Ganser from Alberta. And Olivia Atkinson from Concordia. Congratulations, ladies. Here's hoping you make the teams next year, obviously. But not only that, thrive and do extremely well if you go on to play pro hockey. We're excited to see where you go from here, and hopefully, big things await you down the line for you. So congratulations, ladies, on being drafted into the NWHL. Sticking with women's hockey, I made mention a couple of weeks ago on this show that the Russian Women's Professional Hockey League was looking at expanding a little bit. Two new teams on the table that will be voted on this month at the KHL Board of Governors meeting. The first one we discussed a little bit, that was the Yaroslavl Ice Wings. Now, Yaroslavl is looking to add this team. They've been far more vocal than the second team, which is the Chelyabinsk White Bears. Essentially, they're the Polar Bears, but, White Bears, whatever. Both of them applying to start playing in 2021-2022. So it looks like we're on the verge of seeing teams 9 and 10 join the Russian women. I can't see them not being accepted. It's absolutely ridiculous if either one of them gets voted down, considering that both of them are going to play underneath the KHL structure that the men run under. For me, this is a no-brainer that there's going to be 10 teams now in the Russian Women's Professional Hockey League. That being said, there's a logo for the Ice Wings. It's up on Hockey Blog in Canada if you want to go see that for the Ice Wings. They've already started doing tryouts. They haven't even been accepted into the league yet, and they already have tryouts going. So this is, again, this is almost a done deal, regardless of whether it goes to a vote or not. They held an open tryout on June 17th as they started looking for players that can fill out their roster and get things going, as well as building a farm team. It's one of the things I think that we forget about, but that is happening, apparently. They do have a head coach as well, so things are rolling along that way. They don't have a ton of reason to vote them down. Again, like I said, the KHL should be voting these teams in, but the thing that I look at now is that Russia has 10 professional hockey teams, and we've seen Russia really make advancements on the international stage. Russia is one of the growing powers in women's hockey. They may not be at the same level of a Canada or a USA, maybe not even a Finland at this point, but Russia's right there. Like, they are on the precipice of joining those four teams as being the top teams in women's hockey. And I look at this and I go, you're adding two more teams for Russia now. Russia gets two more for a total of 10 professional hockey. If there's 20 spots available on those teams, let's even go one more. There's 25 on those 10. That's 250 players playing professional hockey at any one time in Russia. Number of players playing professionally right now in Canada and in the US, nowhere close to that. Not even remotely close. And we wonder why Russia's making leaps and bounds in terms of closing the gap on Finland, on USA, on Canada. Like, Russia's got themselves a good setup, a well-funded setup with the KHL funding their model. And they're adding more and more teams, they're adding more and more players where they can draw from when it comes to building an international team. We really need to start looking at this from a bigger picture rather than just, we're professional women's hockey. We need to get the women to playing pro hockey. No, this is for the good of the game overall on a bigger sense as well. And again, I'm not trying to say that the Canadians and the Americans should be, number one for the rest of their careers, for the rest of the history of hockey. What I am saying is that in order for us to continue to build good hockey programs, in order for us to continue to build a strong international hockey community, in order for us to build better tournaments where there are questions as to who may win, having Canada play, having Team USA play at professional levels domestically helps that grow. And if you can't see that, I don't know what you're looking at. Russia is going to emerge as one of the potential medalists in Beijing. I'm going to say that right now. You heard it here first. The Russian women's team is potentially a medalist in Beijing if they continue to operate the way that they are. Why? Because they are putting the funding in, they are growing the game, they are allowing more women to participate, and just by sheer numbers alone, you're going to have a good team by finding more and more women who can play at a high level. It's going to happen. It may not happen in 2022. They may fall short. Again, a Finland or who knows, a Sweden or somebody may come along and bump them off. But they will start meddling soon. If it's not this year, maybe next year at the World Championship. But be aware that Russia is going to be a force now in women's hockey. Because they have a professional league that's been operating for a while. And they're developing some really good players now that they've got some money in the game thanks to the KHL. Hint, hint, wink, wink, NHL, get your butts in gear and get behind the women. But that's just me saying that. So what the hell do I know, right? The only thing I know for sure is that there'll be 10 teams next year. They're looking to fill out rosters. If you have any interest in going to play hockey over in Russia, now's the time to get in touch with either Yaroslavl or Chelyabinsk about maybe taking a spot next year in terms of getting over there for a tryout. So they are looking for players. You can check out their vk.com websites. It's all linked on Hockey Blog Canada. But definitely get over, if you're looking to get into that, if you're looking to get into women's hockey, Russian women's hockey, that's the best way to do it for sure, because these teams are looking for players immediately. So I'm just worried that we're going to start seeing Russians dominate at other tournaments. And we all know that Canada, Russia on the men's side have a deep and long history. Canada, U.S. has a deep and long history. U.S. and Russia have a long history, if you consider the Miracle on Ice and all that. But you're going to see Russian women now start to push the envelope when it comes to Finland, when it comes to Canada, when it comes to the U.S. And they're doing that thanks to the fact that they have a very well-organized, very well-funded professional league. So congratulations to both Yaroslavl and Chelyabinsk, who look like they're going to have two women's professional hockey teams to cheer for come 2021-2022, and it only makes the game better.
Starting in 1871, our ancestors entered into sacred treaties with the Crown.
Our treaties are recorded on paper and in the memories of First Nation elders.
For First Nations, the treaties represent a commitment to building an honorable relationship based on trust.
Understanding the spirit and intent of treaties is the key to rebuilding a respectful relationship.
Staying in women's hockey, I did mention that we would continue to follow the story about the Robert Morris hockey situation. You may recall, Robert Morris cut both their men's and women's hockey programs without any sort of notification, basically slashing the programs without any sort of consultation with players, coaches, fans, sponsors, partners, any of that stuff. Got a little messier this past week. Little messier. And I'm not talking about messier for the Robert Morris players. I'm talking about messier for the university. It appears that the players are organized and going to push hard. A coalition of players has scored a national sports attorney to basically battle for them. And you might recognize this name. Jeffrey Kessler, might recall him from recent stories about battling the NCAA. He scored a unanimous win before the U.S. Supreme Court when it came to the NCAA treating players as employees, where they can now actually earn money from sponsorships and everything like that. Jeffrey Kessler is a big deal. And he came out and he said that, quote, "What moved them is the sense of betrayal and deception. They came to Robert Morris under the expectation of promise that there was going to be varsity teams here waiting for them," unquote. So he is basing this on a violation of the students' rights. I don't know if Robert Morris wants this problem. No lawsuit's been filed yet. Kessler is simply asking for meetings with Robert Morris to discuss options. But I don't know if they want this fight. This is one that they may want to avoid. I don't know. To be honest, looking at this objectively, and I know I've got a lot of history with teams that have been cut. I was thoroughly disgusted with with the North Dakota cut. I was thoroughly disgusted with Lethbridge's cut. Here's what happens now, is basically Kessler puts a little pressure on RMU, and RMU basically recants and says, oh, hockey's back. It's not going to be easy, but remember, he just beat the NCAA in a 9-0 Supreme Court decision. He also went to battle with Stanford University, fought for athletes there after they cut 11 programs, and Stanford was reportedly going to, you know, get away scot-free with nobody challenging them. Kessler came in and got all 11 programs reinstated at Stanford. So he's got experience in doing this. And now RMU is where his focus is now. Don't forget, we're talking about Stanford. Stanford's a $6.8 billion university in terms of its budget. $6.8 billion. And they tried to cut 11 programs. And he said, nah, not on my watch. None. And then he went to the NCAA, who has billions of dollars in their budget, and said, nah, not on my watch. Not on my watch. You're going to pay athletes for representing your school. And the Supreme Court agreed with him. And now he's staring down RMU. Kessler doesn't have to take this case if he doesn't want to. He's already made a career for himself. He can walk away and go, look what I did. And everybody will remember his name. But Kessler, looking at this now, goes, you know what? I want this. Give me this one. This one sounds like it's fun. He's going to go in and he's going to right this wrong that we've discussed for so many minutes on this show, just because he can, because he will. There's no argument here that he has to make other than put it back or else. I mean, really, that's the argument he can make. Put it back or else. Because the or else that he basically can deliver is going to be ugly for RMU. And that's the part that should scare RMU a lot. For the amount of negative press they took, Kessler is essentially going to be the guy who lights the fire and then watches it burn. At this point, I don't care who you think you are. I don't care who you want to be. But in the discussion that happened, where Dr. Christopher Howard basically made the decision for the university to cut the hockey programs, Dr. Howard is in for a world of hurt if he decides to challenge this. It might only be a matter of time before RMU has hockey back. And granted, there are some players who have transferred already. There are some players who have moved out, gone on to other places, transferred to other schools, and will continue their careers there because of what RMU did. But make no mistake about this. Jeffrey Kessler is probably going to have his way with RMU, and there will be hockey at RMU in September. Again, I'm not here to discuss merits of the case. Again, they're not even putting a lawsuit forward right now. It's simply just, let's talk so that we don't have to waste our time here. Because the track record that Kessler brings in is ridiculous compared to what RMU has to stand on for their basis on getting rid of this. As we've explained before on this show, if they're not willing to pay for the repairs to the arena, if they're not willing to upgrade the arena, and that's their basis for doing this, Kessler will absolutely destroy them. So hold out hope, folks. Robert Morris University might be back come September. Reagan Kirk from Manitoba, who tends net for them, might be going back there to tend net once more. Whether or not they decide to continue and want to play more for Robert Morris, I mean, maybe they just pull the logo off their chest if they're not very happy with what the school did, just as a sign of protest. That's up to them. But it sounds like there will be hockey that Robert Morris University will be funding for the foreseeable future if Jeffrey Kessler gets to sit down with anybody. And if he doesn't get to sit down with anybody, he will eventually sit down across the aisle from them in the courtroom, because it sounds like Kessler isn't taking this NCAA stuff very lightly. That if you screw up, if you sacrifice the athletic abilities and the students who are representing you athletically in a wave of stupidity and a wave of ignorance, Jeffrey Kessler will call you on it. That's the catch. That's the update on RMU. Again, we'll keep our eyes on this. Jen and I will keep our eyes on this. We'll see how it goes from here. But basically, RMU showed up to this gunfight with a knife while the players are showing up with a tank. And it's not going to be pretty. But that's what happens when you do stupid things.
I've learned so much about the treaty relationship.
Treaties were fundamental for building Canada as a nation.
First Nations and the Crown entered into treaties that'll last as long as the sun shines, the grass grows, and the waters flow.
It is important to learn from the elders' stories so that everyone can understand that we are all treaty people.
Canada West released their schedule for hockey, both men's and women's hockey. Let's start on the women's side because it's going to be fun, and I'm excited, and let's get this underway because it can't come fast enough. October 15th is opening night, folks. If you're looking for getting back to your local campus to watch hockey, again, depending on local, you know, health regulations and everything, check those before you get down there. But four teams will play at home. One team will be off as the nine-team Canada West season for 2021-2022 kicks off on October 15th. Manitoba will host Calgary on the opening night. McEwen, in their very first Canada West game, will host Regina. Alberta will host Mount Royal. And Trinity Western, in their very first Canada West game, will host UBC. So, Saskatchewan, who gets sent off, can sit back and watch everybody duke it out for the opening weekend anyway. But I'm excited. All those games start at 7 p.m. on Friday. That Friday night should be a fun season when it comes down to getting back and just seeing some good hockey played again by these women and certainly, you know, everything that's going on. On the flip side, obviously the men play the opposite. So Manitoba will travel to Calgary for men's hockey to open the season. Regina will host McEwen. Mount Royal will host Alberta, and UBC will host Trinity Western in those men's games on October 15th. So be prepared. Again, men's hockey, women's hockey getting started on October 15th. It'll run on the 16th. Go all the way through until November 13th. There's a conference break for the women. So there's no games being played that weekend. Just be aware of that, folks, because if you're planning on making a trek down to your local rink or to a rink to catch hockey action, no hockey that weekend in some of the rinks. Men will still play. The men actually have the conference break on the 5th and 6th. November 5th, November 6th, the men will not play. They're off that weekend, and then following that, the women have the following weekend off in terms of conference bye. So everybody gets a bye week that weekend, which is kind of fun. Did some fun digging in terms of looking into the Manitoba schedule and some good stuff that is coming out of that schedule, which makes me happy. Manitoba will host, it's basically once per month. And I hate to say this, but it's basically once per month is what you'll see for home games because of how the schedule is set up now. Only a 20-game schedule. It will run between October 15th and February 19th, and you'll basically see Manitoba play at home once each month. Yes, it sucks. Yes, it's not so good, but that's just how it is. So, October 15th, 16th, Dinos are in town. Calgary Dinos are in town for opening weekend. November 5th and 6th, the Regina Cougars come to town. So, if you know somebody playing for Regina, that's the weekend you want to book for coming down to Wayne Fleming Arena. Again, the conference bye happens on the 12th and 13th of November. November 26th and 27th, the defending Canada West champion Alberta Pandas come to town, which should be fun. Always a good time when Alberta rolls in. We get to see Howie and all the players that he's got assembled for this year, and I'm sure they're going to have another good competitive team again. December 3rd and 4th is the first half bye week for Manitoba. It coincides with the final week of the first half of the season. So Manitoba has their first half bye week on December 3rd and 4th. So no games in December for Manitoba. Last games of the first half will be November 26th, 27th for the Manitoba Bisons. They're back in January. Again, if you're looking to come back after the Christmas break, after the setup there, they're back on January 14th. Okay, so a bit of a stretch. All the teams come back. Manitoba will have their first home game on January 21st, 22nd. And they will welcome the brand new Trinity Western Spartans to Wayne Fleming Arena. The first ever visit by the Trinity Western Spartans to Manitoba, which should be fun. Again, Trinity Western's got a lot of players on there from Manitoba, so it's kind of a homecoming for a lot of the players coming back to Manitoba, but excited to see Trinity Western come here. And then they will close out the season on February 11th and 12th against the Saskatchewan Huskies. The last games of the season for the Bisons that weekend, February 11th and February 12th, because the following weekend, which is the final weekend of the regular season, February 18th and 19th is Manitoba's second half bye. So they get a break before the playoffs, assuming that they make the playoffs. They get a break before the playoffs. Top six teams will qualify out of the nine-team conference. Okay, be aware of that. Top six teams will qualify in the same format that we had last year for the playoffs. So the top two teams will get a bye through the for the opening round, while third plays sixth and fourth plays fifth. The other three schools, unfortunately, will watch from the sidelines that didn't make it. Manitoba experienced that last year. We're hoping to change that this year. I'm not excited about not seeing McEwen. I think McEwen coming here would have been a lot of fun, a lot of chance to chat with a few people that we've had on the show, obviously, and certainly, you know, see how that team is doing overall. I will say this, if you're looking for the information, Manitoba and McEwen meet the first weekend back. Manitoba travels to Edmonton to meet McEwen on Friday, January 14th and Saturday, January 15th. If you're going to be watching that, if you're going to be picking up on that, Canada West TV is the place to see McEwen play Manitoba. I would highly recommend getting a package for this year, especially considering we won't see UBC, we won't see Mount Royal, and we won't see McEwen any of the weeks that Manitoba plays. And we love those teams. I mean, don't get me wrong. UBC comes in, we have a good rivalry with them. Mount Royal, in terms of their solid play and their great team, love watching them come to town. And then obviously, you know, McEwen being the new team, we don't get to see them very often. So be nice to see them, but we don't, unfortunately. That being said, though, the men obviously flip on that. They'll host in January McEwen for the very first time before going on the road to play Trinity Western, which should be fun. I'm excited. I'm excited to see these new teams play. Again, if you want to watch those games, Canada West TV is the place to go to catch that information, canadawest.tv. Make sure you get a package. Watch for upcoming options for that. They are taking subscriptions into that. In terms of it, you know, being costly or anything like that, it's not that bad. They haven't got anything up yet. Schedule is coming up soon. Pricing will come up soon. All that kind of stuff coming up soon. But be aware, if you want to catch those new teams or see Manitoba play against those teams they don't get to see this season in terms of playing at home against them, that's where you should go catch all that action. If it works out, and I don't want to advertise this too loudly yet because I got a pile of logistics I got to work out, but if it works out, I will likely make two additional trips to catch the Huskies and Bisons play in Saskatoon and the Cougars and Bisons play in Regina. If that happens, Saskatchewan will host Manitoba on October 29th and October 30th. Where I'll go and do some radio out there where you can catch the game with a Manitoba voice calling the game if you want. February 4th and February 5th for the Cougars in Regina. So kind of a bookend for those two trips as well, which would be kind of fun. I don't mind doing live hockey. I love it. I would love to be able to do more of it. Obviously, you know, we'll see how everything goes. There's some other tournaments in there as well. If, and here's the catch, if everything works out, because they're the January 21st, 22nd, Manitoba's here, and then they're away the following weekend, okay? February 3rd, February 4th, all that. There's another conference break in there. But if you're looking at this, the 29th, the 28th and 29th, 27th, 28th, 29th, 30th, there we go, of January, is the usually when the Female World Sports School Challenge happens. If that happens, there are no home games scheduled for me, at least for women's hockey. We will cover that again. Again. Assuming that everything is allowed, assuming that we're allowed to be in and doing all that. We'll have to work with, you know, the hosts of that tournament, the St. Mary's Academy Flames and certainly Hockey Canada and figure out everything on that side. But the Female World Sports School Challenge likely will happen that weekend if it's traditionally held on the same weekend it always is. And that means that we'll call those games. It should be noted that in terms of that conference bye, it works out really well for everybody in terms of, you know, how the women play. The men are also off that weekend. So there's nobody to contend with in terms of, which means that we could have the full setup of broadcasters there, which would include Jason Pajak. I'm excited for that. I'm excited to have Jason down there. He's such a good broadcaster. We might have Kylie available. We might have other people available. Again, people like, you know, Alana Sirhan, who's coaching the Bisons this year, or people like, you know, John Rempel, or people. We'll see. Again, we got a lot of stuff to decide on, a lot of stuff to sort of look at. But it'll be a busy couple of weeks during that time. But looking forward to really sort of getting everything going and getting back into the swing of things for live hockey. Because man, it's been a while. It has been a long time for live hockey. Again, last time I called live hockey, if we're gonna put this down to a specific date, February 8th, 2020. The last time I stood beside Kylie Palmer as we called the final game of the 2019-2020 season for the Bisons, where the Alberta Pandas defeated them 4-0 that afternoon to end their season. So, yeah, it's been a while. Been a long while. That being said, though, again, October 15th is when the season will kick off. Check your local listings. Check your local team schedules. Check everything that you have to for that. We're going to have lots of content coming up regarding that as well. So make sure you're checking back as often as possible for different content, different information about that as we get set for another exciting season of Canada West Hockey here on 101.5 UMFM. And finally tonight, let's get to the ugliest story of the week. I don't like ending the show on these kinds of stories, but today we're going to, because honestly, this is just getting worse and worse as news is revealed. The sickening news about the Chicago Blackhawks and what they potentially covered up in 2010 and kept a massive scandal quiet is pretty much an atrocity in hockey. It's disgusting to sit here and think that men who are supposed to curate the game, who are supposed to take care of the game, who are supposed to elevate the game, have set it back so many years by basically being awful people. So if you haven't heard, former assistant coach Bradley Aldrich was convicted in 2013 in Michigan of fourth degree criminal sexual conduct involving a student and is now on that state's registry of sex offenders. However, in 2010, during the Western Conference Final while working in the Blackhawks organization, Aldrich allegedly sexually assaulted two players who reported those assaults to then-skills coach Paul Vincent. Vincent reportedly brought the information to Blackhawks senior staff, including both GM Stan Bowman and President John McDonough, in order to have an investigation done based upon these serious allegations. The executives of the Blackhawks met and decided it would be best if the story went away rather than bringing it to police to investigate. That is awful. That is beyond awful. There aren't words that I can say on the radio that enrage me as much as this did, because I'd get kicked off the radio pretty quickly if I could use the words that I want to use. If this stands to be true, and by all accounts there are many who can corroborate the story, but if this stands to be true, everyone in the front office of the Chicago Blackhawks at that time should be banned for life from hockey. You heard it here. Banned for life. This is essentially another Graham James situation. They protected him while he was doing this stuff and gave a letter of recommendation to his next employer about his time at the Blackhawks. They allowed him to continue to commit horrific crimes against kids. They lied about the situation, covered it up entirely. They allowed this monster to walk the hallways in Chicago through the United Center, and then allowed him to go on and walk the hallways of other arenas and other buildings with kids whom he was committing these atrocities against. This is ridiculous. As per TSN's Rick Westhead, he writes, quote, Vincent alleges that after the players approached him on May 16, 2010 in San Jose, he asked Blackhawks sports psychologist James Gary to follow up with the players and management. The following day, Vincent says he was called into a meeting with team president John McDonough, general manager Stan Bowman, vice president of hockey operations Al McIsaac, and Gary. Vincent said that he asked the team to report the alleged abuse to Chicago police. That request was refused, Vincent said. Unquote. Refused. Not discussed. Refused. If that went down, if that's what happened, if that is accurate, those four men should be barred from hockey with prejudice. Without any question. They allowed a predator to continue to prey on children by letting him go, whether it be he was fired or left the team on his own accord, to other schools and other places, including Miami University, where he also has allegations against him. Let me just make this clear again. This man is a predator. Bradley Aldrich is a predator. He is a registered sex offender. And the Chicago Blackhawks, if this is true, aided and abetted that. Again, I'm going to be... These are all allegations. Nothing has been proven in court. I cannot say that this is true or not true. But it seems like there are a number of people who can corroborate. We've heard other people say that everybody knew it was a secret. The unnamed Blackhawks player wrote to WBEZ the following statement. Success and wins are valued more than people and they need to deal with the serious issues, unquote. That is entirely true. I mean, this is the exact time that Chicago was going through and winning all those Stanley Cups. Don't forget. The winning will cover everything up. Hockey at so many levels at the professional level is broken. So many sub-levels is broken. We keep hearing about everything that's wrong with hockey and everything that people are doing in hockey that's sketchy, that's disgusting, and you just go, how is this sport even at this level allowed to function? We talk about, Jenna and I talk about that on this show all the time, how the business of the sport has eclipsed the humanity over and over again, and that people don't matter anymore. It's all about dollars and cents. Case in point, folks, Chicago Blackhawks, 2010. If this is true, if these allegations are true, it's clear the people don't matter. So, I mean, I don't know what to say here other than, if these people are allowed to continue in hockey, and from what it sounds like, Gary Bettman, who was doing a State of the Union the other day, didn't care, but didn't really sort of bat an eyelash when things came out. Didn't really say, you know, we consider these to be very serious allegations and are prepared to do whatever it takes to right the wrong. Didn't say that. Basically just said, well, we'll just let the investigation run its course. That what? No. We're talking about people here. We're talking about human beings. What the hell's wrong with you people? Not you, listeners. I'm not talking about you guys. You guys are awesome, but I don't know. Like I said, I'm shocked. I don't know what to say anymore. I don't know how to defend this. I don't even want to defend this sport anymore. I love the game so much. I love the pure unbridled joy that you see on players' faces when they score. I love the camaraderie that you see amongst players as they sit on the bench and they tap each other on the helmets and, you know, give each other a pat on the back when they do something good. I love the intense rivalries that we see between players and teams and you know, guys that are willing and girls that are willing to lay their bodies on the line to block shots or do the unthinkable to win a game. I don't like all of the backroom dealings. I don't like all of the crap that goes on that's unspoken. And I certainly will never defend what this is essentially a new Graham James. Bradley Aldrich is the modern day Graham James. And to say it's not would be completely ignorant of the entire situation in both cases. Chicago Blackhawks employed Graham James essentially, and they willfully allowed him to go elsewhere. Without warning anybody, without putting anything down in writing that this guy might be a bit of a predator, bit of an issue. There might be some negativity surrounding this guy in the near future. None of that was said. I don't know. I don't know anymore. I'm like I said, I hate ending the show on stories like this because it's awful. Awful what people do to each other. And I'm tired of it. I really am. Whether it's cutting programs from universities and destroying the dreams of you know 20-something athletes, 50-something athletes in RMU's case, whether it's destroying the lives and the careers of kids who just want to play hockey because some predator is out there doing this stuff, this sport is disgustingly rotten. I wish I could end on something high, on a high note here, but I don't know if I have one. I don't. I tell you what I do know, though. And I'll say this only because I can. Niverville is going to have a fun hockey team for the MJHL, and I'm going to probably go see a few of those games and when they start playing next season, 2022-2023. Here's what I do know. I need to give thanks to the people who appeared in the Treaty Relations Commission of Manitoba's public education campaign entitled We Are All Treaty People. They include historian John Bumstead, Elder Elmer Kershane, Florence Painter of the Anishinaabe Nation, historian Jean Friesen, Constable Jerry Beardy of the RCMP's Indigenous Policing Services, and Tobasanakwet Kanu of the Ojibwe Nation. All those people appeared in the clips that you heard, and I really want to thank them for their contributions in terms of being with us on this Canada Day. In saying that, folks, I hope you have a good Canada Day. Enjoy the day off if you're not working today. I know I put a little time in at work, but no complaints there. Stay tuned for more hockey tomorrow. Game 3 goes in Montreal tomorrow night between Tampa Bay and Montreal as the Habs look to close the gap on their 2-0 series deficit. With that, folks, we're out of here for another week. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio with Skippy here on 101.5 UMFM. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Music. I like it.
Human music heard live on CJUM 101.5 in Winnipeg.